말해 나 먼저 가르치 레시 잠만 해네 니는 아주 직대니게 어 주시지 이게 직게 고급 좀 하되네 야고 싫어 좀 소소서
I just want to start by saying that I'm very happy to be speaking to my brothers and sisters of the Bodhidharma Vihara.
Bardo chöba sigurwa, bardo chöche. Sizana da ngandu chöye la de karasu zi ngandu dunga, dunga danga, ganga de pa seche, ani pa se ure, seche nani ngandu digi rupiye de la chöye se ade, dunga la de nishir sigurwa. Nani diri digo sigurwa da, chana chösa chöye sigurwa ngandu chöye se ade, dunga de karasu.
When we think about Dhamma, the meaning of Dhamma we can understand as, like, for example, if there's a river and one builds a dam in order to stop the flow of the river, to block the flow of the river. This we can understand as being like the Dhamma, which can be used to create happiness. Then one stops the flow of negativity in order to create happiness.
Then, the names are, then I'll do good, draw a meter, same gender, to draw a condition, not chasa, then, not to go at you, got a good horse in it, deva, Louis Devada, and same give a deva to go worry. And then, more at the caracu or marcine, and then you do not go or macanga to go or marva.
All sentient beings, whether humans or animals or unseen beings, we are precisely the same in having, at a deep inner level, the same basic wish, and that is to experience happiness, lasting, stable happiness. And accompanying this is a wish not to experience any problem or suffering or difficulty at all. So this is something common to all beings. And all beings, again, whether amongst a multitude of humans or animals or unseen beings, engage in a variety of techniques in order to achieve happiness, as well as in order to overcome problems and difficulties.
When
comparing humans to the wide variety of animals, humans really stand out in terms of their greater intelligence. And we use this greater intelligence to try to develop more sophisticated techniques in order to achieve happiness and overcome problems in our lives. For example, we engage in education from when we're young and growing up. We're always trying to learn more. And we use this education then in varying forms of employment so as to achieve happiness and to overcome problems in our life. And this is not always expressed in ways which are good for society. There are people who use their skills and their intelligence and their education in a dishonest way, and they deceive others, lie to others, or even steal from others. But they too are doing so with a motivation to achieve happiness. They're using their education and their intelligence and their varying skills in order to achieve happiness. So throughout our lives, we engage in the cultivation of development of varying skills in order to enhance our techniques and our methods in order to achieve happiness and overcome problems.
And di men bi ge dang an zu cong jia ya dang an zu ge lu zhong ji lia ga jie ne su su ge bian zhe sa ji di ji zhu ya dang gang an xie di ne nie gap le di ji zhu ya dang gang an xie di du su yong tu ge ren ma du ding ji de wa dang ding ji gang yu ne bie kong an gang an yu ne mie ba du yu ne su tu ma le si ge di ne de wa yang ya di yu ne zhu tu ma le si di tab lam di ge gang an zu ge di ji zhu ya dang dung an xie tab lam ya bu xiu cha yo ma le si.
There's a great variety then in terms of techniques and methods that people engage in order to achieve their longed for happiness and overcome problems and difficulties. But amongst these, there are those that we would call mistaken paths, and those are paths or techniques rather that society deem to be unacceptable, such as dishonesty and criminality. And these lead to ever-increasing problems. They do not at all lead to a happier life. But the unmistaken paths in the worldly sense, those that you engage in, such as using your education to have good work and to raise your children well, etc., these which too are motivated to achieve happiness and to overcome problems, to a degree, they do that. Yet we also know from our lives, no matter how hard we try, these varying methods and techniques that we apply, they do not lead to a complete eradication of our problems. We do still encounter problems upon problems. And moreover, they never lead to a state of lasting, stable happiness, a happiness that is never punctuated by even a moment of suffering. We do still encounter problems. So the happiness that these techniques that we employ, the happiness that they do lead to is just temporary, fleeting happiness.
Jisa da jisu nunga se da di ji chu ye ge tabla mi yang da ba cha gi mi du su jisa da da na de le tabla mi ya ga de ga du se ne ya ji ge che 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 gu re se da de ne ge tabla mi che nyam ne che gu re se bi gi che se di an ne ji su ji de ne ya an ne ji ge che ge sung hen de ne ge che nyam ne che dian ba mang bu le chu che dan.
So recognizing that these various methods and techniques that we have been applying throughout our life, whilst they may make our lives and do make our lives easier and better, they cannot lead to lasting stable happiness, and we can observe that in the world. Therefore, human beings turn towards varying religions, turn towards religions to try and learn more skillful techniques in order to achieve lasting, stable happiness. And for ourselves who are included amongst Buddhists, we turn to the teachings of Buddha Shakyamuni. And here we're turning to the very first teaching that Buddha Shakyamuni gave in modern times is called Vadanasi. And there he taught the Four Noble Truths, the most skillful of techniques in order to achieve happiness, not just any type of happiness, but happiness that is lasting and stable and completely freed of any form of suffering or difficulty. To list the Four Noble Truths, there are true sufferings, true origins, true cessations, and fourthly, true paths.
디기
Shakyamuni taught that all unwanted experiences we have, from the slight to the serious, all of this comes from causes and conditions. It doesn't come about causelessly. Similarly, all desired states that we experience, all happiness we experience, this too comes about independent on specific causes and conditions. They do not come about causelessly. Let's take as an illustration physical illness. If we aren't aware that we are sick, we will not go and visit a doctor. We will not go and see a doctor. First, we need to recognize that something is wrong. We need to recognize that our body is not in harmony. We are not in the state that we desire. Only once we have recognized that will we go and visit the doctor, and being receptive to receive her advice and apply that treatment. So therefore, first, one needs to recognize that one is suffering, that one is in a state an unwanted state of suffering. This needs to be recognized. And therefore, the Buddha taught, firstly, that suffering needs to be known, needs to be understood, not just on a coarse level, but at a deep, subtle level. Once one recognizes that one is suffering, then naturally one will want to know what the cause of that suffering is. And that is the second truth, that of origin. What is the origin of suffering? Because when one recognizes the origin, one will then want to abandon it. And therefore the Buddha taught secondly that true origins need to be abandoned. So amongst the Four Noble Truths, the first is true sufferings, and the Buddha taught this suffering is to be known, is to be understood. The second is true origins, the origins of suffering, and the Buddha taught that it's these origins that need to be abandoned. So the first noble truth was the true sufferings, and the Buddha taught these are to be known, they are to be understood. So when here with the first noble truth, we need to understand clearly the sufferings that we experience, not just on the coarse level, but the subtler levels too. Thereafter, recognizing this, one will want to know the second noble truth, true origins. What is the cause of our suffering? And then one embarks on a process of investigating what these causes of our suffering are, and then strives to abandon them. So these causes, when recognized, need to be abandoned. And this is the second noble truth, true origins, the origin of suffering. And these, the Buddha taught, are to be abandoned. When they are abandoned, with no causes for suffering, no resultant suffering will be experienced, because when there is no cause, no results can follow. And the state where one experiences no suffering, where all suffering has ceased, this is the third noble truth, true cessations. And the Buddha taught this is to be manifested or achieved, because a state of cessation, or a synonym, a state of liberation, is a state where one has ceased, where a state where all suffering has ceased, or a state where one is liberated from suffering. So freed from, liberated from suffering, with all suffering ceased, one experiences lasting, stable happiness, a happiness that is lasting and stable because it's never punctuated by even a moment of the slightest form of suffering. And this is the state that we long for, a state of lasting, stable happiness, freed from suffering. So this state is the state of cessation or state of liberation, and is the third noble truth, true cessations. And this, the Buddha taught, is to be manifested.
Ane, jige, tsong jepche diwa chung yuene chees kaya maris. Ane, aji, shandagi, ngangzul ya du jese, ane, lien che ngang du chine, kaya tarp toya maris. Ane, ganis toku gure lamna, susu gi nyamlin che gure, susu gom jep nyamlin che, ane, lam nyamlin che gom che, ane, toku gure, gokdin toku, tarpa se, gokdin di, lam nyamlin che toku gure. De, din za, nibi shiba de la sanyo chumlin di ye, lam gombar cha asongar, chisang lam gom kuri es, lam gom lin chini gom cha, susuke saman tam gom nyamlin cheba ina, tarpa topru kuri es, chisang tarpa topru kuri es, chisang lam gom kuri, tarpa topyegi tablam di da, saman nal ya gom cha, nyamlin che, ondus gom kuri es, gom cha kuri es, lam gom kuri es, di rong gomba ina, tarpa topru kuri es, di ina lam gombar cha asong, shiba dili di songar.
liberation or cessation is something that is achieved in our own mental continuum. It's not something that's external to oneself. It is a mental achievement. It's not something that we can buy, because no one can sell freedom from suffering. Moreover, no one can bestow freedom from suffering upon us. It's something that we need to cultivate within ourselves. We need to meditate on it, meditate and achieve it within ourselves. What we all need to cultivate in order to achieve freedom from suffering, a state of cessation, are mental paths. And these are achieved through cultivation or meditation. And this then, these mental paths, are the true paths, the fourth noble truth. And the fourth noble truth of true paths, the Buddha taught, is to be cultivated or meditated. And this true path, these are the method to achieve liberation or cessation. Being that became the Buddha, that became Buddha Shakyamuni, was once an ordinary being no different from us, experiencing suffering, longing to be freed from suffering, longing to experience mental peace, freedom from pain and misery, lasting stable happiness. And as an ordinary being, no different from us, he embarked on an investigation of suffering, coming to understand the cause and the subtle and the very subtle levels at which we suffer. This he would later teach to us as being the first noble truth of true sufferings. After having investigated well what is meant by suffering, he then investigated the causes or the origins of suffering. And this he later taught to us as true origins. Thereafter, after having coming to know, to understand suffering, and coming to recognize the causes and the origins of suffering that are to be abandoned, he then investigated whether a state of having abandoned suffering, a state that it, where all suffering has ceased, where one is liberated or freed from suffering, can be achieved. And he came to see that suffering can cease. And this he later taught to us as true cessations. Thereafter, he started to cultivate, to meditate on true paths, developing the mental paths within him that would lead to the achievement of cessation of suffering, of liberation of suffering. So in this way, he came from the state of being an ordinary being, no different from us, gaining experience in suffering, the origins of suffering, that cessation of suffering is possible, and then the cultivation of the mental paths that will lead to the cessation of suffering. He came to gain great experience of this and achieve their final result. And with this experience, motivated by great compassion for suffering beings such as ourselves, he taught the Four Noble Truths. Amongst the Four Noble Truths, of true sufferings, true origins, true cessations, and true paths, we've heard that true sufferings are to be known, true origins are to be abandoned, true cessations are to be manifested, and true paths are to be cultivated. So to look now at the first, true sufferings, what is it then that is to be known? So it's suffering that is to be known or to be understood. And suffering itself can be, to know suffering, one needs to look at it in varying degrees of subtlety. To do so, suffering itself, or dukkha itself, can be divided in many ways. The most common division is the threefold division. First, the suffering of physical and mental pain. Secondly, the suffering of transient happiness. Thirdly, all-pervasive suffering. And it's these three that are to be known. Of the three types, the first type, suffering of physical and mental pain, this is something that we know very well, we have all too much experience of. This is where we experience some kind of physical or mental discomfort, where a feeling tone arises of discomfort or suffering. And this then can be of something such as when one's too hot and one is therefore a feeling of being too hot arises, or some kind of other kind of physical discomfort such as an illness. This of course leads to the arisal of an suffering feeling tone. And this then is an illustration of the first of the three types of suffering, that of suffering of physical and mental pain, the type of suffering that we are most aware of. Of the three types of suffering, it's only this first type that we've just looked at, the suffering of physical and mental pain, that we recognize and that we already have a coarse understanding of. The second type of suffering, we don't even recognize this as suffering. The second type is the suffering of transient happiness. So this is what we consider as pleasure, what we consider as happiness. So for example, if we have a nice time going out with our friends or a nice day with our family, going somewhere on holiday perhaps, this is what we in the world consider as happiness. We do not yet recognize it as suffering. Rather, we think of it as happiness, and we think that there is no happiness or pleasure that is superior to this transient, temporary happiness. We need to recognize that this worldly happiness is impermanent in its nature, that it does not last. And it's that its impermanent nature that leads us to a feeling of disappointment, of sadness when it finishes, when it ends. So this happiness, this worldly happiness, this worldly pleasure that we experience, we need to recognize its transient nature. And it's in all forms, whether we go outside into the sun and we experience some pleasure at having the sun rays on our skin, but then quite quickly we get too warm, so we move into the shade, then we miss the sun and we go back out into the sun. And like this, we long for happiness that doesn't last. And then we left missing the pleasurable experiences that we've had, hoping to achieve them again. So we need to recognize that all these experiences, these pleasurable experiences that we've had, they're finished. All the pleasurable experiences we will still have, they will also finish. There is nothing lasting or stable to be found within them. We need to recognize them for being transient, for being impermanent. So here, the second type of suffering, the suffering of transient happiness, what we need to know, what we need to recognize and understand here is worldly pleasure is not the kind of pleasure we should be striving for, in that it is not ultimate pleasure. It is temporary pleasure. So it's fine to experience it, but we should recognize it, understand it for what it is.
The first type of suffering of the three, the suffering of physical and mental pain, when we experience it for even a moment, that moment is a moment too long. We instantly want to be freed of such suffering. The second type of suffering, that of transient happiness, we do not relate to in this way. We see this as being as good as it gets. When we experience pleasure, we long for it to last. And as soon as it fades away, there's some disappointments, and we immediately give rise to desire to experience it again. And it's this kind of transient happiness that we strive for, and we hope will last, we hope will transform our lives and give and fulfill this deep inner yearning that we have for something lasting and worthwhile. So we need to recognize the second type of suffering, the suffering of transient happiness, for what it is. We should recognize, when enjoying it, that it won't last. so that when it comes to its natural end due to its impermanence, there's no disappointment. And moreover, we should also recognize that there is a far superior happiness that we ourselves can achieve, a happiness where one is, where all suffering has ceased. And that is a happiness that we can achieve. Of the three types of suffering, then, we divide suffering into three to come to understand it better. The first we've looked at, the suffering of physical and mental pain. The second is the suffering of transient happiness. And now we come to the third, that of all pervasive suffering. All pervasive suffering refers to our physical and mental aggregates. For example, our body and our consciousnesses. So these are in the nature of suffering. Suffering pervades them. And the reason that these are now looked at is because it's our physical and mental aggregates, our body and our consciousness, serves as the basis upon which all suffering is experienced. So whether we were looking at the suffering of physical and mental pain or the suffering of transient happiness, all those instances, all those illustrations, those examples of suffering that we experience them on the basis of our body and our mind. Whether it's an illustration of suffering that's very obvious, such as when we too hot in the sun and then we move indoors to cool down and then we become a bit cold, so we move back, we put a jumper on or we move into the sun again. With even something as obvious like that, we only experience those examples of suffering of heat and cold because of having these aggregates. In that case, this body, as well as the consciousnesses upon which we experience the feeling turn of suffering. So therefore, all pervasive suffering refers to our physical and mental aggregates.
파요 차섬 주 뇨모 발레틴 주티와 체고 제자 뇨모 발레틴 주디 주 뇨모 발레틴 주비기 제보 되라 아니 야고 야고 용거 말에
Why is it then? So we can understand that in dependence on this basis of our body and our consciousness, we experience suffering. But why is that said then to be an illustration of suffering, all-pervasive suffering? Why is it said that our body and our consciousnesses are pervaded by suffering? So here we need to investigate and see what is the cause for us having this body and this mind, so these physical and mental aggregates. Well, we know that we were conceived and born from our mother's womb. To be born from our mother's womb, our mother had to get pregnant. And we know that she came pregnant because our parents slept together and therefore our father's sperm fertilized our mother's egg. So this we know. And also if we think slightly further back, the reason for our parents sleeping together was due to attachment or desire. So both of them would have had desire for each other, desire to have a child, so they had attachment. And due to this consciousness of attachment, this afflicted consciousness of attachment, they slept together, and what would become us, what we were conceived, sperm fertilized the egg, and later then we were born from our mothers. So this whole process that led to our birth started with the afflicted consciousnesses of attachment within our mother and of our father. So therefore, this process started from a contaminated base, not from a pure basis, but a basis, not from a mental consciousness that was pure, but a mental consciousness that was contaminated, consciousness of attachment. Therefore, because the stream of causes started from an impure basis, we now have these impure aggregates that serve as a basis of suffering. Moreover, for us to be born from our mothers, not only was her egg did her egg need to be fertilized, but consciousness, our consciousness, needed to enter into that fertilized egg. For that to come about, a cause is required. A cause is required for our particular consciousness to enter into the fertilized egg of our mother and due to the sperm of our father. So therefore, a cause was required, and that cause is karma. And yeah, that cause is karma. And that karma that we had accumulated that led to us being, our consciousness entering into the fertilized egg, this was karma that we had accumulated in previous lives, and this was accumulated also under the influence of afflicted minds, and therefore that karma is contaminated. So what we see here is for us to have been born from our mothers, there is a process that due to our own afflictions and the accumulation of karma, as well as the stream that came from our parents, their own afflictions of attachment and coming together, those two streams joined and came together, and we therefore were born. So in this way, we come to see that the origin or the cause of us having these contaminated aggregates, physical and mental aggregates, is contaminated karma and afflictions. So in this way, we come to understand in greater detail the second noble truth, true origins, that the actual origin of our suffering is contaminated karma, which is karma that was accumulated whilst under the influence or the control of afflicted minds. Here, looking at the second noble truth of true origins, we come to understand that contaminated karma and afflictions is the cause of all our suffering, because it's the cause of having the basis of suffering, these physical and mental aggregates. That was the third type of suffering, or pervasive suffering, the basis upon which we experience our suffering. And it's contaminated karma and afflictions that leads to us being repeatedly reborn in samsara. So therefore, it's our contaminated karma and afflictions that we need to abandon, because contaminated karma and afflictions are the cause for our perpetual cycling, or circling in samsara. That cause of karma and afflictions is what needs to be abandoned. And if we abandon them, we achieve a state of liberation, a state of cessation. And that's the third noble truth, the truth of cessation. So having come to understand then suffering and the basis for all our suffering, which is the first noble truth, we then looked at more detail at the origin of our suffering. And the origin of our suffering was contaminated karma and the afflictions. And so that's the second noble truth, true origins. We then understood that if one breaks that cycle, abandons the afflictions completely and the karma that it accumulates, suffering will cease. Our uncontrolled rebirth in samsara will cease. And that's the third noble truth. And here, when one looks in more detail of the two, afflictions and karma, it's the afflictions that lead to the accumulation of contaminated karma. It's due to minds being afflicted that karma that is accumulated is contaminated. Therefore, of the two, it is the afflictions that need to be abandoned. And how then to do so? How to abandon the afflictions and thereby achieve true cessations? This brings us then to the fourth noble truth of true paths. Afflicted minds are consciousness. To abandon them, we have to transform our consciousness. We have to change our way of thinking. We have to develop a way of thinking that the role of the afflictions is reduced, and later the afflictions are completely eradicated. This we need to do. And this is entirely a mental process. We need to change our way of thinking through altering our external world, the material world. This will not lead to a complete transformation of our inner world, our way of thinking. Rather, we need to develop mental paths. And this is the fourth noble truth, the cultivation of true paths. To make an illustration, if we are ill, we should go to a doctor. And when the doctor has examined us as well, she will advise some medical treatment to undergo, which may include taking some prescription medication and may involve some lifestyle changes, such as changing our diet, maybe doing more exercise and so forth. And we should follow that advice. This is required. But we also know that whilst following the advice of a skilled medical practitioner may well lead to healing, it will not be able to overcome all our problems and difficulties across across our entire life completely. In order to transform ourselves and to overcome suffering completely, we need to transform our way of thinking. So whilst relying on the material world and acting in skillful ways, we need to put more energy into transforming our way of thinking. Because it's only through transforming our way of thinking that we can entirely overcome all forms of suffering. And this is the fourth noble truth, that of true paths, where we cultivate specific mental paths or ways of thinking, transforming harmful ways of thinking and cultivating beneficial ways of thinking. This is the meaning of the fourth noble truth, true paths. Way to gain freedom from suffering, to bring a complete cessation to suffering, is to transform our way of thinking, to develop virtuous mental paths. This is the only way. We do so whilst relying on relating skillfully to the material world, but with an emphasis on transforming our way of thinking. Transforming our way of thinking means transforming the way we respond to experiences in the world, transforming the way we relate to people and events in the world and circumstances in the world.
So here we need to recognize the faults of the many of the afflicted minds, that the afflicted minds are the cause of suffering. So what is meant by this this general term of afflictions or afflicted minds? They are consciousnesses which are afflicted, such as attachment, anger, pride, jealousy. There's a vast array of minds which are not virtuous, which are not wholesome. These are afflictions. Again, and we need to then recognize the harm that they play in our life, as well as in the lives of others, and not just this life, but future lives too. So to take amongst those, such as attachment, anger, pride, and jealousy, to take anger as an illustration. When anger arises within us, immediately it destroys our own mental peace. Immediately we are unhappy. And then if we express it to others, whether through a facial expression or through a way of speaking or through physical behavior, we destroy the peace of others. We can engage in arguments or physical altercations with others. And moreover, it leads to ongoing residue of unhappiness within us, such as resentment towards others. So we see from the arisal of an affliction within us, such as anger, not only does it destroy our own unhappiness, but its expression leads to unhappiness for others. Moreover, it leads to the accumulation of negative karma, which will ensure not only suffering in this life, but suffering in future lives as well. So therefore, the afflictions lead to suffering for ourselves and others in this life and future lives. So this needs to be recognized, that these afflictions, the cause that keeps us bound within samsara, leads to suffering for ourselves and others in this and future lives. And it's these we need to abandon, and to abandon them, being consciousness, we need to transform our way of thinking. This is how we can abandon the afflictions completely. The training of a way of thinking, developing a way of thinking so as to abandon the afflictions, this is the fourth noble truth of true paths. To be able to have the required energy to train our way of thinking, we needed to have already thought well about suffering, the origin of suffering, and that cessation from suffering can be achieved, those first three noble truths. And independence on giving rise to a strong yearning to achieve a state where all suffering has ceased and where one experiences lasting stable happiness. So in other words, independence on giving rise to a yearning to achieve the third noble truth, true cessations. One will then have the required strength of mind to engage in the training to transform our way of thinking.
Lunga yisum nyeche cheba ne dipare. Chizan dipa ngu kutus. Chizan dene zangi lunga yisum yukane shenla nebege jawa saade. 早已经的几面三百个，苏州松海的几起么修起我，然后就是讲，你旅游过，俺旅游过那些，你拒绝些当次数些当，加上些当，没过好当的，早已经的几面三百三百的，旅游过那些，没当三间，干的些呢，可有个车上的那边个两是早已经的几面三百个。
So, as I've just presented in the previous segment, this is how the Four Noble Truths work together, that in dependence on the training, in our reflecting, coming to understand the previous one, the latter one will arise ever more strongly within us. Also, what we need to recognize within us is that the goal is to transform our way of thinking. And another way we can express this is that all our activities, whether physical or verbal, come from a way of thinking. They are motivated by our minds, our consciousnesses. So, for example, someone who steals, every time they steal, they are motivated to steal. They have an intention to steal. Or if we speak harshly, there is an intention to speak harshly to others. So all our behavior, physical and verbal, whether it is beneficial or harmful, comes from our way of thinking. So this I mention again to emphasize the need to take responsibility for our own minds through recognizing that to achieve freedom, cessation of suffering, freedom from suffering, we need to abandon our afflictions. To abandon our afflictions, we need to transform our way of thinking. This is our primary objective. So therefore, we need to take responsibility for our own minds, take responsibility for our own way of thinking. And this is done through independence on these reflections, making a commitment not to bring harm to others, through our physical behavior, our way of physically interacting with others, also through our verbal behavior, our way of speaking to others, our verbal communication with others. And that this way, our way of interacting with others, comes from a motivation, a mental process. So in particular, we need to commit to guarding our mind and ensuring our mind isn't under the influence of afflictions, such as attachment, or anger, or pride, or jealousy. And through making this commitment not to come under the influence of the afflictions, and to relate to others physically and verbally in a way freed of an afflictive motivation, this leads to the accumulation of virtue, of positive karma, of wholesome karma. And this is an incredibly important point. Through repeatedly making this commitment not to harm others at all, in particular through ensuring that our mind is not one of a mind that is afflicted, so ensuring that our attachment doesn't arise or anger doesn't arise towards others, in this way, we can fulfill this commitment not to harm others.
And as we become more habituated to making this commitment and our sincerity in that commitment grows, we will see a change in our behavior. We'll express this differently through taking responsibility for our own way of thinking. We will start to transform our way of thinking and thereby transform the way we speak to others and the way we act towards others. We will start to see we have become more honest in our way of communicating to others, more trustworthy. We will more willingly want to help others. We will want to ease their burden of difficulty and pain. And we will not want to take advantage of others or act in a dishonest way at all, because we value others more. And through valuing others more, we will have harmonious relationships with everyone. Others will see us as trustworthy, as reliable, as dependable, and will want to be with us. And joy will arise within them whenever they even think of us, let alone meet us. And as we see this transformation within ourselves through taking responsibility for our own minds, happiness will grow within us. Our mind will be more at peace, more at ease, and we will see that we're having a beneficial impact on others. We're easing their burden of suffering. We'll see that when they are particularly afflicted, that their mind calms in our presence. And as we start to gain more skill in taking control of our way of thinking, and we start to experience ever greater benefits of doing this, we'll be motivated to make ever further endeavors to take responsibility for our way of thinking. And this will lead to a strengthening habit of being mindful of our way of thinking and our way of interacting with others.
Na tong yu sen ba se jaya re. So su yu ta ben jo ra tang, ten nu ba da kar zi na shen li ya, pen bi ki cha wa, shen yi shen, dunga se ya tang, shen di ki tu ya li ya, ane ya kun jo le cho pu ya li ya, tang ki san bi ki, de san mo tang ya ra. Na so su yu ki, an chi shen, chi ke lop jong da, de ni ke ma shing wa to, so su yu ki lop jong shing wa to, lop jong di ya, ngi bi ji tang, kun to li ya, pen bi chi li ya, ngi kun to lop jong chi ki, san bi san mo tang ya. So, So,
is to take responsibility for our way of thinking and ensure that we do not come under the influence of the afflictions because of the harm it brings to ourselves and others. The second part of the training is to consciously develop virtuous ways of thinking, beneficial ways of thinking. In particular here, we think of the mind of generosity. So the mind of generosity is literally the wish to give. And here we understand giving very broadly. But of this expression, wish to give, it's in particular the term, the wish, that is important. The desire, the wish to give to others. And we understand giving to others as being of benefit to others. So the first part of the training was to cultivate the determination and the mindfulness not to bring harm. The second is to cultivate the determination to bring benefit to others. In the first part of the training, we commit to not harming others through our body, speech, and mind. And the second part of the training is to commit to benefiting others through our body, speech, and mind. So here, we develop the wish to bring benefit into the lives of others, to ease their burden of suffering, to bring joy and pleasure into all those that we directly as well as indirectly encounter. And here, when we think of generosity, we think of it in a very broad sense, not just material giving, although that is needed, but the skills and qualities that we as individuals possess. We use our qualities such as to be a friend to others, to give our time to others, to listen to those who need to speak to someone, to be warm and with those warm and kind to those who are experiencing difficulties. And where we have particular skills through our education and our life experience, we use this to guide others, to give advice to others. These are all ways of practicing generosity to others, of expressing the wish to give to others, expressing the wish to be of benefit to others. And the more we train our ways in this way of thinking, we will start to notice how many opportunities there are to be of benefit to others. And when we notice these opportunities, we will readily take them. Moreover, we'll start to seek out these opportunities to be of benefit to others. And in this way, we further transform our way of thinking and thereby transform our lives. We start to live a life that is not self-centered, but is rather other-focused, focused on the well-being of our community, focused on the well-being of all those that we encounter. So this then is the second way to take control and responsibility of our mind. Firstly, we ensure we don't bring harm to others through ensuring that the afflictions of anger and attachment and so forth don't dominate us. And secondly, we develop a way of thinking to be of benefit to others.
We've looked at two trainings. The first, then, is a commitment not to bring harm through our body, speech, or even way of thinking. And the second is to be of benefit to others, to give of ourselves, whether materially or emotionally, or our varying skills, to others through our body, speech, and mind, our way of thinking. Then thirdly, is to develop a mind that is patient. And patience in particular means that a mind that stays undisturbed, that doesn't come under the influence of the afflictions, that keeps the welfare of others at the forefront of our intention, no matter what we encounter. So this is the third training, to develop an attitude of patience.
So
So the first training was being ethical, the determination not to bring harm. The second was being generous, giving of ourselves to others. The third training was of patience, in developing our mind so that it stays undisturbed no matter what adversity we encounter. And fourthly, is a training of joyous perseverance. So here, we look at our spiritual development, we look at the progress we're making in our mental transformation, and we generate delight in this. Delight in our spiritual development, delight in the positive impact that we're having in the lives of others, and we strengthen our determination to continue with our spiritual development, to be of ever greater benefit to others, to ensure ever more so that we don't bring harm into the lives of others. So this is the fourth training, that of generating joy in our spiritual development and committing to continue to strive in our spiritual development. A fifth training is that of single-pointed concentration. One develops one's mind in a powerful, concentrated manner through utilizing mindfulness and introspection. This too is important. And the reason that single-pointed concentration is of such importance, or shamatha is of such importance, is because of the many afflicted minds that one has, these can be condensed into three: attachment, anger, and ignorance. In order to be able to eradicate them completely, one needs to develop single-pointed concentration and the mind of special insight or meditative insight. These two powerful minds are essential in order to be able to completely eradicate our attachment, anger, and ignorance. The sixth training then is to train ourselves in cultivating of wisdom. To cultivate the many types of wisdom, but the wisdom here is that of recognizing selflessness. Selflessness is recognized through utilizing analytical reasoning to analyze and investigate reality, coming to realize selflessness. A moment ago I mentioned that the many afflictive minds that we have can be condensed into three: attachment, anger, and ignorance. But if one goes to the very root, what is the one afflicted mind from which all the others come? That is ignorance. Ignorance is the root of all the afflicted minds, the root of all our suffering, and it is the cause for us remaining bound in the suffering realms of samsara. So this is what we need to abandon. ignorance. Ignorance is a consciousness. To abandon this consciousness of ignorance, we also need a consciousness too. A consciousness that is completely contrary or opposite to ignorance. And that is a consciousness of wisdom. Wisdom realizing selflessness. And in order to cultivate this consciousness of wisdom, we need not only to engage in investigation, but we need to do so on a basis of a powerful concentrated mind of single-pointed concentration and meditative insight. Then our wisdom will be powerful enough to completely eradicate ignorance, to cut this root of our suffering and gain freedom.
In the world, as well as in Buddhism, there are many different types of ignorance and therefore correspondingly many different types of wisdom. So for example, if we see a particular type of medication, whether that medication is suitable to heal our illness or not, this uncertainty, this not knowing, is a type of ignorance. Or if there's a particular food and we think to ourselves, is this healthy in general or not? That's ignorance. Or if we think, is this healthy for me or not? Will I have a reaction to this type of food or not? That too is a type of ignorance. Through investigating, we will be able to clear away that ignorance and we'll come to understand whether, for example, this medication will help us or not through investigation. Through investigation, when we come to recognize that, yes, this medicine will help, or no, this medicine will not help, we are developing a wisdom, which is contrary to that ignorance. Through going through the process of investigation, we develop wisdom. And that wisdom is contrary to that type of ignorance and eliminates that type of ignorance. So this says through using our analytical consciousnesses, and investigating, analyzing, that we develop wisdom and overcome the contrary type of ignorance.
On that din ki timu ki nane zo o de kare se ne da ngang zui ngang se ki di na ngang su le ngang se ngang zui liak kar che we ne kar de ngang se di yor wa da che sa de ngang zui ngang se di ni yung yun ni su kane shue ba di ngang zui hao gu go ma re ha mo wa di da ngang Got dunga ya gyu nyomo ba ye gyu to di de da jisen di me ndi me ba su gore she jisen nga na zo nem ji de nga sa ji yo de di ne da nga di nga zo na yu de ga de den gore se ne gyu da ji phung bo la ga ya ma de bo phung bo la ma de bo ko ro wen ni du ba na du gore na wa na shin di jin du ge de ti mu de da se ma ri ba se gore de da se ma ri ba ti mu se cha gore de nyomo bo ya gyu to di de da di me ba su gore she de
The ignorance that keeps us bound in samsara is not an ignorance to do with medicine at all, but it's an ignorance that grasps at the self as existing in a way that's contrary to reality. It's an ignorance that believes that the self exists in a way that it does not. It's an ignorance that believes that phenomena such as the physical and mental aggregates exist in the way that they appear to the mind, exist in the way that we think about them. This ignorance is called the ignorance of self-grasping because it grasps or believes that the self exists in a way, in the way that it appears to the mind when it does not. So, and this ignorance of self-grasping is the root cause of all the afflicted minds. It's from grasping at the self as existing in a way that it does not, that our attachment comes, our anger comes, resentment, jealousy, pride, all come. And this ignorance of self-grasping, the root of our samsara, is what we need to abandon.
Kanes pangu guri labi yon de dang anan zuki da dixi shera pin yamne siya de kuku guri chesan da da siya de nang zui ya lola ya kanes nang du sam tang da nang yon du lola ya nang du pungpo la pungpo dang pungpo la ma tuyo ba koro ngon yi chuba nang yu ba de hako yi du dini ki da di da jeba che che pungpo la ma tuyo ba rang ngon yi chuba che du gui mindu jeba che ku su jeba che yu du nang zi gansam chik ya Pumbola,
when Buddha Shakyamuni taught in Varanasi, taught the Four Noble Truths in Varanasi, when he taught that true origins, the second noble truth, is what is to be abandoned, he was referring specifically to the ignorance of self-grasping as being the origin of all suffering, and therefore is the ignorance of self-grasping that is primarily to be abandoned. Moreover, he taught the path, the mental path that is to be cultivated in order to abandon the ignorance of self-grasping, the true origin, and that the true path that is to be cultivated in particular is the wisdom realizing selflessness. And how to develop this wisdom realizing selflessness? First, one needs to come to see how the self appears to the mind, and then investigate to see whether it exists in the way that it appears or not. And this is how one comes to understand reality, comes to understand that the self does not exist in the way that it appears at all. When one comes to realize selflessness, this is a consciousness of wisdom that is contrary to that ignorance. Through the cultivation of this wisdom and the elimination of the ignorance of self-grasping, there's no cause to give rise to the other afflictions, such as attachment or anger. Therefore,
no contaminated karma is accumulated. Therefore, without any contaminated karma being accumulated, one becomes liberated from the resultant suffering. A cessation of suffering is achieved. The third noble truth, true cessation. So in order to achieve this, wisdom on the basis of concentration is required. That brings an end to the time that we have together. And this then was a brief presentation on what Buddha Shakyamuni taught in terms of how one can successfully achieve lasting, stable happiness, a state completely freed of suffering, the presentation on the Four Noble Truths. And we can take confidence that the being that was to become Buddha Shakyamuni was once an ordinary person just like us. And we, too, can train like he did in developing an understanding of the Four Noble Truths, abandoning true suffering, coming to know true sufferings, abandoning the origins of suffering, in order to achieve true cessations, which are to be manifested, and done so through cultivating true paths. So this is what Buddha Shakyamuni did, and we too can do that. So thank you. Thank you very much.